Today is our wonderful opportunity to begin Masechet Eruvin. And as I mentioned to you yesterday, what I'd like to do is first do a little bit of a overview of Masechet Eruvin and basically remember what it is that we're going to be talking about over here. It's a continuation of everything that we've been talking about for the past months in Masechet Shabbat, which is really all about Hotzah, because we're back again to the main issue of Shabbos, which is the main issue of Maaseh Bereishis, which is the definition of the particulars that we call space-time that has to do with the possibility of having individual Nivroim with their own particular coordinates. Otherwise, everything, of course, can't begin in terms of creation because there's just plain just to be. So because of that, the next Masechet, because the way that we've dealt with the idea of the Rishuyas, of which there are only really two options that are actual Rishuyas. Everything else is just not a particular place that we call a Mokum Torah, Midiraisa. So in Shabbos, we spoke about the Rishus Ram, Rishus Hayochid. We had our Mokum Torah, which was everything else. And then the Rabbanan were Mechalek, the Inyanim of Mokum Torah, from a Mokum Torah to places where it would be Choshev enough to be called a Carmelit, which is something that has some of the Chumras of Rishus Hayochid, Rishus Rami, not allowed to be bringing from one into the other. But we did not discuss in Masechet Shabbos the other concept. Of course, we bumped into it many times, but we didn't discuss the other concept of Rishus in the world, which has to do with the idea of ownership. Rishus in the fact that a place is not only you, that is coordinates of oneself, but the extended coordinates of self that we call my place. Now, that creates all kinds of problems, and that's because the interrelationship of that idea with the differences between a rabbim and a yochid, and we've seen this type of different usages when it comes to Hilchas Tuma as well. So in Tyrus, we also have a concept of Rishus HaYochid, Rishus HaRabim, which we learn out from Seita. Over there, it's surprisingly entirely defined by what we call Deot, that is to say, who is there, and who is the one that is considered to be present. That's a different idea. But over here, we have the concept of diur. So because of the difference in Shabbos between Rishus HaRab and Rishus HaYochid, it suggests itself that the elements of Rishus HaYochid have to do with the person's extended self, that is to say, where does he live? So that created a concept of diurin, in which case where we have multiple diurin, and because of that, the suggestion is immediately understood that, well, where you've got 100,000 people wandering around, that seems awfully like a Rishus HaRabim. And on the other hand, if there's a place where it's miyuchad just for me and nobody else can come in, that seems very much like a Rishus HaYochid vis-a-vis such a Rishus HaRabim. So because of that, we run into relative Rishuyas, which are built around the idea of diurin. These relative Rishuyas, in terms of standard construction, go as follows. Your personal place is your home. The second place that you have is where several homes open up into a joint yard. So that, as we've seen throughout the second Shabbat, is called a chotzer. That's more public. However, it's still private in the sense that we can list the number of diurim that are allowed in and that are belong there and those that don't belong there. Then we have the next level out in which these chotzerot themselves participate in the use of an entranceway to all of those chatzerot. So it's a type of alleyway. That's called a mavoi. There are two types of mavoi. There is a mavoi which is open on both ends, which is called a mavoi that is patuach. And then we have a mavoi that is satum, which is it's closed at one end, and it provides an entrance from the Rishus HaRabim into the various chatzerot that run along it. Again, relative to the chatzer, the mavoi is the Rishus HaRabim. Relative to the Rishus HaRabim, obviously, the Mavoi is Rishus HaYochid. So here we run into the distinctions between the way that the Torah defines Rishuyos, which is kulo in terms of mechitzot, because they are really spatially defined. And these things are not defined in terms of mechitzot, they're defined in terms of diurin. And obviously, we can run into a tremendous number of confusing situations because of that. Because let's say in terms of the mechitzot, if you have a mavoi satum that is completely surrounded by three mechitzot, now that would make it a rishus hayochid. And if I'm sitting at the edge of that mavoi and I'm watching the big highway with hundreds of thousands of people scurrying along it, and I obviously, if I carry from one to the other, the reason that I would be chayav from carrying from the one to the other has nothing to do with the number of people. It has to do with the question of one area being surrounded by the mechitzot, the other one not. But in terms of my psychology, I walk out of my house, I go into my chatzar, now there's a lot of people there. I feel that I'm carrying something from my private rishus into a rishus that is mixed with other people. And because of that, the first takana of Erevin is called Erev Chatzerot, where the various homes in the chatzar combine their food in a symbolic act of creating one mixed rishus, so that we all live together, so to speak, and therefore we don't worry about the diurin. I now walk out. By the way, I would obviously not have a problem if I don't carry, anything from my house into the chatzar. Okay, so then there's no problem. If I didn't make an Erev, Who cares? My problem begins only when I walk out of my house carrying something, or I want to carry something into someone else's home. But suppose I want to carry something within someone else's home, and I come to visit, well, why not? Suppose I want to carry something in the chatzar, which was not in the house, a lawn chair, and I want to move it from one end of the chatzar to the other. I certainly do not need an Erev to do that, because that's all in one rishus. So it's the change that's the problem. So I want to carry from an Erev, from a house into the chatzar, I need what's called an Erev chatzeros. My next step is I want to go and carry something out from the chatzar into the mavoi, which is more of a diurim, and because of that seems to me similar more to a rishus harabim. Okay, so then I have to make sure that I have a way of mixing the people in the various chatzerot with each other in order for me to carry from my chatzer into what would look to me like a rishus harabim. And because of that, I have what's called a shituf mivaot, where every chatzer combines themselves in the same way that every house in a chatzer combines itself. Here, every chatzer combines itself with a shituf that makes them one and allows me to carry from the chatzer into the mavi. Again, the question of how far I'm allowed to carry in the mavi proper if I don't carry from the chatzer into the mavi, that was something we discussed back in Shabbos, carrying from one end of a mavi to the other end of a mavi, and if there's any chashash because of its similarity to Rishus HaRabim. Now, I have another problem, and that is, if I am going to be in my mavoi and I see that I'm carrying from my chotzer into the mavoi and I come up to the edge of the mavoi, now there may be 30, 40 people walking through the mavoi at one time for the various chatzerot. We're all carrying from our chotzer and we're heading towards the main street. What actually makes me aware of the fact that this alleyway, which is being used by an awful lot of people, and I don't know, it looks to me the same as the street that I'm about to make a right turn on. So the problem of the possibility of carrying out from a mavoi into Rishus HaRabim is one problem that is not addressed by the shituf, obviously, in any way, because I cannot be mechalek. It's not obvious to me when am I leaving the alleyway, which is full of people, and entering into what's defined by the Torah as the Rishus HaRabim. That's one problem. The other problem is the general resemblance in my mind of the fact that there's a lot of people always in this alley and the way that people who are not fully aware of the ideas of mechitzos understand a Rishus HaRabim. To them, a Rishus HaRabim is the place where everybody goes. Okay, so the mavi is also a place where everybody goes. If I don't have a way of separating out that mavi in my mind from Rishus HaRabim, I run into two possible problems. One is I may actually carry from the mavi into Rishus HaRabim, lacking awareness of the fact that I've changed my coordinates vis-a-vis the Torah space. That was something that we spoke about most recently in Hilchos Shabbos, about not sitting at the end of a mavi reading a book in case your book falls out into Rishus HaRabim and you don't notice. But that would be a problem not only right at the front of the mavi. If there's nothing there that would make you notice it any other time, you could just walk straight out from any place in the mavi. Problem one. Problem two would be the overall effect of people confusing Rishus HaRabim with mavois. And if we allow them to carry out from their chatzar to the mavi, then they might just think, oh, well, so then you're allowed to carry into a place where there's even more people, or maybe even less people. I don't know. But they're not aware of the difference between the rishuyas in terms of mechitzas. They keep thinking of it in terms of diurin. Therefore, they're two completely different issues that need to be addressed. One is the heker of the mavet. That has to do with mechitzas, which is the old-fashioned issue of Shabbos. Nothing to do with diurin except for the fact that it's triggered by the confusion of diurin. And for that, an Erev doesn't help, a Shitav doesn't help. You have to do something about the actual shape of the Mavoi so that there is a clear-cut distinction between it and Rishus HaRabim. Now, we're going to see that there's a lot of Machlokas in different sugyas between the Rishonim as to whether we're dealing primarily with a Tikkun that is there in order to remind me that this is, in fact, an area that has mechitzas. It should not be confused with the Rishus HaRabim, into which I'm about to enter. Watch out, you're about to enter Rishus HaRabim, which is called the Heker issue. But there's another problem, and as I said, that is to make it clear to me that mechitzas are what's important. And because of that, to close off the mavui, we create a mechitza type thing, which would not normally be called a mechitza, but which is here working as a mechitza because that was the takana for the mavui. So that is more than a mere heker. It actually serves as a fourth mechitza. We'll see the differences that this approach makes. So again, keep the two sugyas totally separate in your mind. The beginning of Erevin does not discuss Erevin. The beginning of Erevin discusses closing up a mavui with a virtual mechitza or with a heker. We'll see the difference. Perhaps one of these takanas is a mechitza, one of them is a heker. There are two different ways in which I need to close up that fourth side that is open in the mavui. One of them is called a korah. A korah extends directly over the gateway, the doorway, the opening of the mavui. And it is similar to like a roof that would come down. If it would act as a mechitza, then it would be a mechitza. It's also a heker. So that as I walk, I notice that there's something across the front opening, and therefore I understand that I'm leaving a delineated rishus, and that brings me back to the awareness of mechitza. And I understand the difference between the rishus hayochid element of the mavui and the rishus harabim element of the street that does not have any such virtual mechitzas. There's another way that I can do this, and that's by having a straight piece to the side, either to the right or the left, as I walk by, and I notice that it's sticking out, and that is itself a heker that you are about to leave the mavui, and the mavui is not to be confused with Rishus HaRabim. So that's called a lechi. Now, obviously, there are other things that you could do. You could easily build a Tzurat HaPetach. A Tzurat HaPetach obviates the need for anything else because a Tzurat HaPetach actually is a mechitza. And there, if I make, even if it has no doors on it, but I put up a doorway on the entry to the chatzar, there's nothing to discuss. To the mavui, there's nothing to discuss. Then it's completely surrounded by four mechitzas. I would no longer have to do anything else with it, as we'll see. So that is what our first couple of prokim are going to be discussing. They're not going to be discussing Erevin. And therefore, it's really about, even though when we say nowadays the word Erev, most people don't even know that an Erev has anything to do with Erevin. They're so confused that they think an Erev is this thing that we were just discussing, which is make an Erev means even worse. They think make an Erev means make a Tzuras HaPesach, which of course is the last possible thing that make an Erev has to do with, because a Tzuras HaPesach is making a mechitza, not making an Erev. So the common usage of the word is really horrifically misleading, because that's the last possible thing that would be confused with an Erev. Mela, if you want to say put up a korah or put up a lechi and you confuse that with an Erev because you can't make an Erev unless you have one of those things, you can excuse that kind of thing. But at Tzuras HaPesach, to say that that's the Erev is really pretty far-fetched. And the reason that, of course, we do that is because there is no way to turn a Rishus HaRabim into an area that would be enclosed that you could then make an Erev on, unless you use the Tzuras HaPesach, and even then it would not be a real Rishus HaRabim D'oraisa. You couldn't even do that too, as we saw the Machlokas and Shabbos. So don't get confused with terminology. So the first perek, and I just want to go through the various prokim over here so we get a sense of the whole Masechet. The first perek is going to be discussing this din of what it is that you need to do for a mavoi in order to make it some place that would be not confused with the Rishus HaRabim, and therefore would allow you to then consider whether you want to make a shitov in your mavoi. But if you don't have that done, you can forget about it. There's nothing else to discuss And so once we talk about that, we also get into what would constitute a proper mechitza. And that would be the question of whether horizontal, vertical bars, crossbars, fences, what would be the size of an opening that is considered to be an opening, or what is too much of an opening and is then considered to be a pirtza? What's the maximum width of this opening, height of this opening, and so on. That's our first perek. The second perek is a very special case, which we spoke about briefly in Masechet Shabbos, which is a totally different type of mechitza that is only allowable for one particular purpose, and that was getting water out of a be'er in a case where it's rabim, and you can make what is called passim. So these are passei be'raot, and the second perek deals with the dinim of passei be'raot, which is making the completely virtual, as we spoke about. This is something that's often used in optical illusions, where you create the image of a mechitza and the brain fills in the rest of it just by having a little bit at the corners. And that's exactly what this is. There are four corners, and your brain fills in the rest of the mechitza, and that gives it a din of a mechitza surrounded on all four sides. So these are called diyum din. I'm hoping that you're starting to keep your terminology together. Okay, so we've got pasim, we've got diyum din, we've got lechi, and we've got korah, we've got amovei satum, and we've got amovei batuach, and we've got a tzurat ha-petach. And then, so, okay, obviously there's all types of dinim that are involved in that issue, because the question is, can a street run through it, or do you have to move the street to the side, and what's the maximal distance so you can keep the pasim be'raot from each other, and things like that. Finally, in the third perek, we start talking about Erevin, and that's perek B'chol Ma'arevim, and there we talk about what exactly is the Erev, how do you make the Erev, and what type of foods, and where could the Erev be, and does the Erev have to be in the same rishos, the things that we actually started talking about right at the end of Masechet Shabbos, where we were talking about Richie's bottle of grape juice, if it was put too high, if it was in a basket, would it be Hu B'Mokam Echad, the Eruv B'Mokam Acher, all of those things we needed to discuss. The next perek is talking about a completely different issue. And that is, there's another type of Eruv that this Masechet has to deal with. And that is something that on the surface doesn't have anything to do with the question of the diurin. It drives me nuts, Barnea. It has to do with the question of Techumim. Now, remember that Techumim, there's a big machlokas about Techumim Bichlal, whether it's the Oraisa Derabbanan, and whether perhaps some of it is the Oraisa, some of it is the Rabbanan, which would mean that there are two different types of Techumim. One of them is the Alpayim Amah that we're familiar with, which, according to almost everyone, is for sure the Rabbanan. But then we have the Techum, which is the size of the Yud Beis Meal, the size of the actual Machne Yisrael, in the Midbar, which there may be the Oraisa, according to many Rishonim. Of course, Machlok is also Rabbi Akiva and the Chachomim, as we saw. So this already opens up a whole new issue. So first we deal with the question of, in the fourth perek, what happens when somebody has been taken out of the tchum? What do you do? And what happens, what is your tchum under various circumstances when you were coming in? Let's say you got caught on the road, you were on a ship, your plane landed late, and so on and so forth. Which exactly is considered to be your tchum? From what point is your tchum? Then, The next parak discusses the shape of the city. Because in order to define a tchum, the tchum is not a personal thing unless you're all on your own outside of a yishuv. But the mokum, and of course this you could see immediately, for the first time we're discussing mokum, I'd say ish mimekomo. And now if that's the case, it means the Torah has already hinted at the concept of personal space. Ooh. Once that's true, go backwards from Tchumim and start thinking about the nature of a home and a chatzar, and you now understand very much what the interrelationship is between this sudden new idea of something that has nothing to do with the mechitza and is still called your makom. Wow, that is only diurin. Where do you live? And that's called makom shvitato. The mokum of your shvita on Shabbat defines how far you can walk from that mokum of shvita, which leads to the concept of an Erev Tchumim, which is to formally change your mokum shvita by putting your meals somewhere else, which indicates this is where I am going to be. So as long as that place is reachable on Shabbos, that is to say, it's not more. It starts off within your tchum. It can extend your tchum, if you put it at the very end of your tchum, and you make that your formal tchum, by taking the center of your tchum and moving it to that new location. And then what you can do is you can move it all the way to the edge of your previous tchum, and now your new tchum begins 2,000 amas from that space. But remember, the problem will be everything you gain in one direction, you end up losing in the other direction because you have moved your formal place. So now the question is, how do we define that place? Because here your place is your city, and this would mean your social context. So what defines a city? So there we have all kinds of special dinim that we learn out, interestingly enough, from cities in the Torah. And that is, of course, from the Arei HaLeviim. We know that the Torah provides an area around the Arei HaLeviim of 1 kilometer, basically, of parkland, followed by an additional 1 kilometer of agricultural land. And that was a given to the Leviim. That becomes the definition of all cities. And that is where the tchum of Alpayim Amah comes from. But the question is, where's the end of the city start? It does not work by looking at a particular end of a city. What we need to do is we need to create a map of the city by taking its maximal north, east, west, south directions. How far did the maximum extension of the buildings of that city extend? Draw a straight line and create a map of the city from which then we start counting the Alpayim Amah, not from where it looks to you like the tchum begins, which is why it's very, very confusing. You actually need an aerial map today in order to have any idea of where the tchum is. Many places, the area that is part of the city goes on and on and on for many, many miles, and even though it's going through what appears to be forests and so on, because on the other side, the city is sticking out over there, and you don't even realize. So that's Perek Ketzad Ma'amru. Now, we go back in the sixth Perek to discuss the problem of making an Erev where there's a Goy or an Apikurus, or somebody doesn't participate, or somebody wasn't home, or somebody who wasn't there at the time and then comes afterwards. That's all in the sixth Perek. In the seventh Perek, we talk about what type of things force two Chatzeros to become one Chatzer. What if there's a door between them, a window between them, a break in the wall between them? What if there's water between them? What if there's a shared area of storage between them? What type of things force a single chutzner out of two? And what type of things allow creating a single chutzner out of two? So that a lot of different chutzners may be able to actually carry directly from one chutzner into the other. That's the seventh parak. The eighth parak is how you can go about making an eruve techumim for a rabim and all of the other issues which then come up, which is how much you would need for each person in terms of food and so on and so forth. The tenth parak talks about a sugya that we brought up, the ninth parak talks about a sugya that we brought up briefly in Shabbos a number of times. That was Rabbi Shimon Shita, all of the gagot and all of the chatzirot and all of the karfefot and so on, that they're all the same. And that is part of all of the understanding of the different areas carrying from one roof to another roof in an apartment building where you may have a number of people under the roof. Maybe you've got 10 different apartments. Can you carry on top of the apartments? What are the areas that are defined by diurin? And over here, of course, we need to take into consideration the shape of what is called a karfaf that we ignored until now. And that is an interesting combination of diurin plus mechitzot. So a karfaf usually would be a backyard or an area that you can go into. It's private. The question is the size of it, which is learned from the chatur of the Mishkan, and whether it was mukaf l'dira. Was it made for living in or not? That is where Chazal allow you to carry within it. After that, if it wasn't made for dira, or if it's too large to be part of the normal size of a hekef of a backyard, bigger than the Chotra Mishkan, at that point it becomes a new type of carmelite, not to be confused with the standard carmelite, for a very simple reason. It is 100% bona fide rishus hayachid, because it's completely surrounded by mechitzas. Nonetheless, it has the chumras of the Carmelites, not to be confused with the kulas of the Carmelites, because over here it's a complete rishus hayachid. Those type of issues are really scattered about all over. They're brought together in Perek Kol Gagot, and then the 10th Perek is very difficult to give a hagdara to. It deals with prote dinim from a lot of these things all mixed together brings us very close back to the end of Masechet Shabbat. We're over there in Shabbat. We talked about somebody who gets caught carrying things. And here, too, the parak begins with somebody who finds tefillin outside and what he's allowed to do with those tefillin. So in a sense, the Masechet forces us back to reconnecting Erevin with Shabbos. So that's basically an overview. It gives you the main issues, and now we can begin with our Perek Mavui. So once again, this has nothing to do with Erevin. It's what will enable a Mavui to be a place that you could carry within, and that will allow you ultimately, if you want to carry from a Chatzar into it, will allow you to make a sheet of Mavos. But this is pre-sheet of Mavos. We're talking about pure Mechitza and virtual Mechitza issues. Okay, now this Mishnah is patterned on the opening of the Mishnah in Masechet Sukkah, as Tosis explains, and is a little bit strange, as the Gemara will point out, because it starts really in the middle. I mean, it hasn't even told us that there's a problem of Mavot. It hasn't told us what you're supposed to do with the Mavot. And all of a sudden, it starts talking about the position of the Korah that you're going to have in this Mavot, as if we know all about it, which is a little bit wild. So it starts off with saying, if the Mavoi, if the entranceway to the Mavoi is more than 20 amos high, remind you of Sukkah? Yes, exactly the way Masechet Sukkah begins. Sukkah shigvoa miyasmi mama. But here it doesn't say it's possible. Over here it says yima'et. Okay, so make it lower. Now put your Korah inside the 20 amos, and you can effectively ignore the rest of the opening. Of course, I never knew I was supposed to put a Korah, so the Mishnah is definitely confusing. Rabbi Yehuda says that is not necessary. Eino tzarich. We'll have to see why that is and what he holds. How about if the entryway into the Mavui is more than 10 amot wide? Also, too wide. That is called a pirza, not a petach. And this is all done with ptachim. But of course, im yesh lo tzurat ha-petach, if you actually created a tzurat ha-petach, remember a tzurat ha-petach is defined as one stick on one side, one stick on the other side, and one stick on top of those two sticks. So when I say sticks, they don't even have to be sticks. They can just be ropes, strings, the slightest thing that creates a picture. And that's what we call the Erev, supposedly a wire on top of telephone poles, or you could just actually use strings coming down that are tight strings on top. And that gives you a Tzuras HaPesach. If it has a Tzuras HaPesach, then it makes absolutely no difference. No matter how wide it is, it's basically considered to be completely sealed in. Says the Gemara, now how come when it came to the Mishnah in Masechet Sukkah, which appears to be very similar to this Mishnah, it doesn't say that it's pasul. It doesn't say that you should be memayit. It says that it's pasul. So it's not hatam. Sukashi gavo alamala miyasri mama psula v'rebiuda makshir. I mean, like, it's really wild. If you're going to use that Mishnah as a model and start a Mishnah in the middle of a sugya as if you're learning Masechet Sukkah, I mean, at least keep to the same basic surah of the Mishnah. So how come over there it says it's possible, and over here it says what to do, yima'et, and over there Rebiuda says, nah, you don't need to. Over here he says, nah, you don't need to. And over there he says it's kosher. I mean, so, like, why the differences in kosher pasul versus do I need to do something or don't I need to do something? It's a very different phraseology. And so, maishna gabi sukkah de tani psula, v'gabi mavui tani takanta. Well, that's because a sukkah deal right tani psula. Mavi drabanan tani takanta. So Rashi understands this to mean like this. It's absurd to say that something is pasul when I never even heard that it's supposed to be there. I mean, how can you tell me puzzle and pretend that I know what you're talking about? This Korah is puzzle. What the heck is a Korah? What was I supposed to be doing with this Korah? Why are you telling me it's puzzle? So therefore, it would be so silly that what we need to do is say, look, there's such a thing as a Korah, which if placed too low, too high, has to be brought down. Okay, so now I know there's a concept of putting a Korah within Esrim Amot. When it comes to a sukkah is an extant halacha, which everybody knows from the time of the Midbar. Now you want to tell me it's puzzle, everybody will know what you're talking about. Okay, it's puzzle. Tosfos does not like that understanding of what the difference is, and he shows that there's going to be problems understanding it in the continuation. He understands that if it would have said Yima'et by the the din of the sukkah, it would have sounded like it's a lechatchila. It's better for you to make it lower. So therefore, it wanted to say pasul. Hashem came over here, we were dealing anyway with the Darabbanan. I'm not worried about that kind of thing in the language, so it's more effective to tell me what it is you should do about it. Okay, just be mermaid it. Okay, that's one possibility. Vibaitema, another possibility is, look, I mean, the truth is, the oraita namitani takanta, I mean, it certainly would have been better once I'm dealing with telling you what to do. I mean, that's better than just saying puzzle. I mean, why not tell me what to do about it? And I wouldn't have been choshesh, according to this teretz. And the reason that I cannot use that language when it comes to the sukkah is because there were a bunch of things over there. I mean, it wasn't just about how high the sukkah was. I mean, over there, it was talking about all types of things. It was talking about if it doesn't have shalosh tfanas. If it was talking about, yeah, if it's beyond esrim amas. It was talking about if it's got too much sun, more sun than shade. So what am I going to do? I'm going to start telling you what to do about every one of those things. I'll have to split up the Mishnah into three completely different Mishnayos. A sukkah that is 20 amas high, make it lower. A sukkah that doesn't have three mechitza, make another mechitza. A sukkah that's got too much sun, add tzchach. I'm not going to do that. There's a chiv to teach things as efficiently as possible. So over there, I say pasul. Mashiach, and over here, there's only one thing to worry about, and that's where the Korah is located. So it's obviously effective to say yema'et. And that makes perfectly good sense. So sukkah, the nefishin mele, there's so many things to say about it. It just says pasul. Mavid, a lot of fishin mele, only have one thing to worry about. Tani takanta. Omer Rav Yehuda Amarav. Let's understand where this takana came from. I mean, what do we pick out just at random 20 amas because I like it? I'll tell you the makor of it. Says Rav, the Chachomim actually patterned the halacha of the Korah based on the Pitcho Shel Heichal. So they said that in the same way that we want to talk about what would be a practical opening, which is what we're dealing with over here, because we need to at least begin with something. To begin with a pirza, where something is like totally open, there's nothing to begin with. What's our raw material in the fourth side of the Mavik? The raw material is that I see an opening to a reshus. If I don't see an opening to reshus, technically called a petach, then what I'm looking at is a pirza. All I see is a broken down area. And then I can't begin being mitakenet. And so where do I find a maximal opening that's referred to in the Torah? Well, the Beis HaMikdash, we talk about all the time El Petach Ol Moed. And over there, we know that the Pesach of the Heichal was exactly this. It was 10 amas wide, and it was 20 amas high. And that's the size that they chose to give us in our Mishnah. So lo lamdu el pitcho shel heichal. Where's Rabbi Yehuda, who argues? And he says, no, there's no need to make it within 20 amas. That's because he patterned it, according to him, the Chachomim patterned the din of tikkun mavui on the petach of the ulam, not on the petach of the heichal. So remember that in front of the heichal, there was a porch, and the entryway to the ulam was twice the size, both in width and in height. It was 40 amas tall, and it was 20 amas wide. And because of that, Rabbi Yehuda says, well, what's the need to bring it down if it's only 20, 25, 30? I mean, well, you don't need to bring it down. That would be fine. And therefore, he says in the Mishnah, no need, because it says, after all, in the Mishnah, Pitcho Shel Heichal is 20 amas high and 10 amas wide. But the petach of the ulam in front of the Heichal was 40 amas high and 20 amas wide. Why did they choose, the Chachamim versus Rabbi Yehuda, why did they choose their respective positions? Shneyem mikra echad darshu. They both said, look, let's look at the concept of a petach that we find in the Torah. So it says, v'shochato petach ohel moed. So there's obviously a word called petach. The Rabbanan hold, the kedushat heichal is one thing. The kedushat ulam is another thing. And when the Torah is telling you the petach ohel moed, chi ketiv petach ohel moed, aheichal ketiv, none of the dinim of petach ohel moed are supplied in the ulam. And if you do something in the ulam that's meant to be done in the ohel moed, forget about it, baby. That's like doing it in the azora. So the porch is not part of the heichal. The porch is part of the azora. Therefore, when it talks about the petach, obviously it cannot be referring to this petach. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Heichal v'ulam kedusha achanti. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the two kedushas of the heichal and the ulam have one halacha. And because of that, if it says petach or moed, it could mean just as well the petach of the ulam, which has the same din as the ohomoid. V'chiktiv petach or moed, atar vayuhu diktiv. It's referring to both that structure, and therefore the petach would have to include a 40 amma high and a 20 amma wide. Or there may be another explanation. It could be that according to Rabbi Yehuda Nami, kedushat ulam l'chud v'kedushat echal l'chud, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that they don't have the same halacha. But maybe the basis of Rabbi Yehuda, who says you could learn it out for Pischa Shel Ulam, and not only for the Pischa Shel Heichal, is because of the Pasuk, Dichtiv, because it does say in Yechezkel, sort of, El Petach Ulam Habayit. Now, as Tosis points out, it doesn't really say that. There's no such Pasuk anywhere. But they're putting together, basically, the Pasuk in Yechezkel that speaks about the Ulam Habayit, and then a different Pasuk that says Petach Habayit in the same context. So then it would be calling the Petach Habayit in terms of the Ulam. Okay, so we're pretending that the Pasuk actually says, according to this approach, it's that because the Torah refers to this as a Petach. The Rabbanan say, well, I mean, if it would have said that, El Petach Ulam, I would have accepted it, that we could go for 40 high and 20 wide, but it doesn't say that. Even the way you're putting together the psukim, it's basically saying El Petach Ulam Habayit, which simply means the bayit which is open into the Olam. Wait a second over here, guys. What are we talking about? None of these psukim that you brought in the Torah, Pesach Oel Moed, I got news for you. The Pesach Oel Moed is referring to this little tent-like thing that was in the Midbar. You're talking about this gigantic building, you know, and you're learning it out of this big building. Maybe it's 40 amas. For goodness sakes, we're talking about this little Oel Moed, which is what do you get? It's a maximum of 10 amas high because of the Krashim were only 10 amas high. So where are you coming up with 20 and 40? And this is crazy. V'aktiv, the Pesach, the Pasuk that it says over there is referring to the Mishkan in the Midbar. The Mishkan u'dichtiv. That's okay. Because Ashkechan Mishkan dikri Migdash u'mikri Mishkan, Migdash dikri Mishkan. The Torah uses those terminologies interchangeably. And because of that, any din that we find is referring to the Mishkan is also referring to the actual bayit in each stage. And I'll prove this to you. Because the Elotem Ach, if you're not ready to accept that the terminology is interchangeable, so then Hod Yom Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel, Shlamim Sheshachatan Kodem Ptichat Daltot HaHechal Psulin. How do we know that if you shechted your korban shlami before you opened up the doors to the Heichal, it's possible? Shenema V'shachato Petach Ohel Moed Bizman Sheptuchim V'lo Bizman She'em Ne'ulim. That pasuk is said about the Mishkan. How do you know that it would apply to the Migdash? Because certainly the door that we're referring to over here, it's not as if it's an actual closure, because doors that are not made for security are not considered to be actual mechitzas, as if they're kept closed. They're there as a sign of tzniut bi'alma, essentially. They're not meant to keep people out. And therefore, it would be only a din, maybe, in the Ohel Moed. So doesn't it say that b'mishkan? Ela Ashkan Mishdash Hikri Mishkan and Mishkan Hikri Mikdash. It's because we do find in the Psukim the Torah refers to them interchangeably. Wait a minute. Where? I mean, you're telling me Shmuel says that. Thank you very much. But where does it say that in the Torah? I know where it says that the Mikdash is called a Mishkan. Yes, because it says V'natati Mishkani B'tochachem. That pasuk was said from the Ohel Moed, so the Mishkan was already there. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was promising us that there's going to be a Mishkani B'tochachem, obviously he wasn't repeating where he was talking from. He was talking about, ultimately, you'll come into Eretz Yisrael, I'm going to put my Mishkan there, you're going to have a Beis HaMikdash in the sense of a Beis HaMikdash. So I see that the word Mishkan simply means a mokum for the Shechina, Mishkan Shochein, the place where I live. Now, that would be considered to be a Mikdash. Yes, that I do see. But I do not see where we refer to the Mishkan as a Mikdash, that you're saying that it would be interchangeable. Where do I see that? I mean, maybe The one place I can think of is it says, V'nasua kahatiim nosei hamikdash. Wow. Now that sounds interesting because obviously the kahatiim were not carrying around a mikdash. They were only carrying around a mishkan. So apparently the mishkan is called a mikdash, right? And it says, V'ikimu, they were carrying the mikdash. V'ikimu ta mishkan ad boam. Okay, that's pretty clear. So they were carrying a mikdash and then it becomes a mishkan when they put it up. So clearly the two are interchangeable, right? No, not right. Because the words over there, they were not carrying the Mishkan, my friends. As you know, Kahat was carrying the Orin. So when it says that they were carrying the Migdash, it meant the Davar that was Mikudash, Ahuba Aronu Dichtiv. It was not referring to the Mishkan itself. Ah, Elamihacha. Remember that the whole Tzivui in the Torah is Va'asuli Migdash V'shachanti Betocham. And then we go on to define how to build a Mishkan. There you go. So that means in the very opening of Truma, we're already discussing the fact that we're going to be building a Migdash, even though it's really a Mishkan. So obviously the Mishkan itself is called a Migdash. But isn't there a problem over here? Because the word Petach, which you're basing this on, does not occur only in the context of the Petach or Moed, which is very, very big. Why can't I learn it out from the Pasuk that says Petach Shar HaChatzer? Now that's called Petach, and the Shar HaChatzer was a lot wider than 10 Amot, as I'm about to prove to you. Dichtiv, Orech HaChatzer Me'a Bama, V'roch HaChamishim V'chamishim V'koma Chamesh Me'ot. It's beautiful that we've left Masechet Shabbat and we're smack back bang at the Mishkan and the Mikdash in the most fundamental way. We won't even know what they're called, how they're built, what's the structure of the Chatzer. For heaven's sakes, until now we talked about a lot of elements. We never got to the idea of the Chatzer in its detail. So we're finally between Erev and Shabbos, we're able to reconstruct the entire Mishkan. So now we're back to looking at the Chatzer. The Chatzer is 100 amos long, and then it's 50 amos in its width. Now, on that side of the eastern wall where the entry was, the reason, by the way, it says chamishim b'chamishim. It's quite complex, remember, according to Rashi. The meaning over there is like this. We split the area, which was 100 by 50, and that's the 5,000 amos square that we talk about in so many of the measurements back in Shabbos. And so the idea over there was that the first 50 by 50, which is why it says chamishim b'chamishim, the first 50 by 50 is the equivalent of the Azara. It is entirely free in front of the Mishkan. The doorway of the Mishkan comes right up to that 50 by 50, and the back 50 by 50 area, which of course altogether would be 100 by 50, the back 50 by 50 area is taken up by the 30 of the Mishkan itself, plus an additional 20 behind it, which in the Beis HaMikdash we have the same idea of the area behind the Heichal, plus the additional, since we have 50, the additional 20 and 20 on either side, not only in back. So we've got like a U of 20 going around the Mishkan, and the Mishkan comes right up to the area in front. So if we've got this, now let's take a look at how we make the wall to the east. The way we make the wall to the east is Chamesh Esrei Amak La'im La'Katef, Uchtiv La'Katef Hashenit, Mizeh Mizeh L'Shar HaChatzer Kla'im Chamesh Esrei Amak. And it seems to be saying very clearly, there were 15 amot coming out from the north side towards the south and from the south side towards the north, which gave us a coverage of a total of 15 plus 15, which is 30 amot of curtains on the eastern wall. Okay, so how big was the opening that was not covered by curtains? 20. So now that means that the Torah is calling a 20 amma wide petach a petach. Now, why are you telling me that I am limited to a maximum of 10, okay? So if you're saying that I only cover 30 out of 50, then I should say, mal halan chamesh baruch av esrim. So just like over there, it would be fine to have 20 ammas wide. So over here, it should be the same thing. It should be chamesh baruch av esrim. We should be able to allow all the way up, even if the Korah was only 5 amas high. I mean, obviously we know it can be 20 amas high from the fact that it's also called a petach, 20 amas high. But the idea over here is that the Torah calls this a petach. So what's wrong? It says the Gemara, well, you can't really use petach shara chatzer as a normal petach because it isn't called petach. It's called the Petach Shara Chatzer, as if that's hyphenated, Petach Shara Chatzer. So it's not called a Stam Petach, and therefore it doesn't serve as a model, or Vibaitema, you don't understand the whole thing. When it says 15 Amot, it does not mean 15 Amot width of Kala'im on either side. It means 15 Amot high on either side. High? What are you talking about? It says Beferish in the Pasuk, it was 5 Amot high. How are you trying to tell me it's 15 Amot high? No. 5 Amot high means it went 5 Amot beyond the height of the Mizbeach, which was 10 Amot high. And that way it would provide a tzniut for a Kohen that would be standing on the Mizbeach doing the Aveda. And that's why it's giving us a total of the 5 plus the rest. That's the point. So Mitzvat HaMizbeach V'lamala, which is a total of 15 Amot. It was 15 Amot high. So the Torah is trying to give us the understanding of what the area of the Kla'im was meant to cover. It was meant to cover the area above the Mizbeach. That's the point. In which case, I have absolutely zero data about how wide the Petach is, because I have no idea. The Torah is not talking about width. It's talking about height. I don't know. Maybe there were like 45 Amot covered. Do I know? It doesn't say. Okay. So now let's get back to what we were talking about, and that is that according to Rav, the Mokar is the Pischa Shel Ulam. That's how Rav understood the Machlokas. Is the Mokar Pischa Shel Heichal? Is the Mokar Pischa Shel Ulam? Ask the Gemara, it doesn't make any sense. If Rabbi Yehuda would have learned it from the Pischa Shel Ulam, so then how do you understand the Mishnah? The Mishnah says if it's wider than 10 Amot, then you have to make it less. And Rabbi Yehuda didn't say a word about that. He didn't say, nah, you don't have to worry. He only responded with the, nah, you don't have to worry, when it was talking about how high it was, but he didn't say a word about how wide it was. And if, in actuality, he had learned it out from Pischa Shel Ulam, what difference would it have made? He should have argued on both of them. Omar Abaye, he does argue on both of them, and you're supposed to use your brains. When you heard that first, nah, you don't have to, you should have figured out yourself that he was talking about the Ulam. And because then, obviously, he has to sit there and tell you everything he's going to argue about. In fact, if you take a look in the Braita, you will find that Rav is absolutely correct, and that Rabbi Yehuda does argue in the Braita, the Tanya, HaRachav Mi'etz Ramot, in the Braita it says you have to be Mamayit, like the Lashon of the Mishnah, and in the Braita it adds, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eino Tzarech Lema'et, and that in fact he argues about the width, same way he does with the height. So then why doesn't he argue in the Mishnah? Because he wants to use your brains. Poli begova v'adin l'rochba. Being as the issue is one issue, it's not two separate things. So once you've understood that he's using a different model, then you need to figure out, okay, what's the model that he's using and what would be the implications of that model for the width? The Mishnah always works like that. Still, I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. You're telling me Rabbi Yehuda learns from the Pischa Shel Ulam, right? So then that would mean that there was a maximum height of what? Of the Pischa Shel Ulam. The Pischa Shel Ulam was only 40 amas. The problem is that we have caught Rabbi Yehuda saying you can go beyond 40 amas. Ha ha ha. And if that's the case, he clearly cannot be learning it out of the Pischa Shel Ulam. Because Vatanya Mavuishu Gavoa as Me'asrim Ama. If it's more than 20 amasai, you have to be Mamayit. Rabbi Yehuda says, nah, it can be 40 amasai. It can be 50 amasai. Whoa. It can't be 50 amasai. And Bar Kapora says, yeah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it could be 100 amasai. I mean, look, if you just had said Bar Kapora, I would have said 100. He didn't really mean 100. He meant it could be much more than 20, more than 30, all the way up to 40. He says, yeah, it's 100. Maybe it's a Lashon Guzma, but Rabbi Yehuda says Beferish, 40 or 50. I mean, it's no Guzma. You already said 40. So if you say 50 is not good and would be puzzle, so then I understand you can go up to 40, according to Rav. So Bishlam and Rabbi Yehuda can go up to Arboim for Pischa Shel Ulam. But where in the heck would he get Chamishim? So how did Rav possibly do that? Omer of Chista, he made a mistake. Rav made a mistake, and I tell you, I know why he made the mistake. There was a Braita that he had seen. He hadn't seen that Braita, but he had seen a Braita that was very misleading. And it's this Braita that misled him. Hamatznita at ite l'Rav. It was the following Braita that caused him to make a mistake, because it says there, D'tanya mavuishu gavoa mi'esrim ama, yoter mipitcho shel heichal. So it actually used the words of the model. And it says, if it's higher than 20 amas, which is more than the Pischa Shel Heichal, then Yima'et. So Rav says, oh, so now we see clearly that the Braita is teaching me that we need to have a model for the concept of Petach. Now, if so, I need to understand Rabbi Yehuda. So Husava Rav assumed that if the Rabbanu talk out that it's Mipitcho Shel Heichal Gamri, so then it makes a great deal of sense that Rabbi Yehuda would be simply taking that in terms of the meaning of the Kedushas Ulam and Kedushas Heichal and so on, and he would learn it out from Pitcho Shel Ulam. But that's not true. And we know it's not true because we've discovered the other Braita that Rav wasn't aware of, where Rabbi Yehuda actually goes beyond 40 and therefore couldn't possibly have modeled it on the Ulam. So what is the Mokar? The Mokar is what is generally acceptable as a Petach, because we do know that we talk about, let's say, and when we're going into the Petach of Achashverosh's palace or Shlomo HaMelech, when he builds his palace. Over there, the Pischo Shel Melachim could be much higher than the Pischo Shel Ulam. I mean, take a look at the Taj Mahal, or where you've got things that are much more than Arba'im Amot. So you can go up to, indeed, Chamishim Amot, Shishim Amot. So because of that, Rabbi Yehuda understands that there's no need for us to limit things to a very particular model. We just say the norm is to have, if you're making a very impressive public building, it can be higher than the Pischa Shel Ulam. If I'm not mistaken, the Taj Mahal is almost 100 feet high, which would be significantly more. The Pesach I'm talking about. V'Rabbanan. Rabbanan say, Imi Pitcho Shel Heichal Gemiri. My problem is like this. If you're telling me that it's true that the Esrim Amos, according to the Chachomim, is coming dafka from the Pischa Shel Heichal, why don't they need doors? That Pischa Shel Heichal had doors. So how do you know that a mavoi that's got nothing, that is considered to be a Pesach? Maybe a Pesach like that is not a Pesach. Alamatnan, then why does it say that the heksher of a mavoi, and this says is a Mishnah, it's coming up, Beit Shammai says you need to have both a lechi and a korah, but that's enough. And Beit Hillel says you could choose either a lechi or a korah. It never occurred to anybody that if I'm going to be learning out of the Pischa Shel Heichal that I would have to put up doors on the mavoi. Says the Gemara, the daltot heichal aren't real doors. The daltot heichal are made litzniut of ba'almahu de'avida, and they're not there in order to protect the heichal. They're not security doors. They are tznias doors. Because of that, we understand that they don't define the nature of the opening. Okay, fine. So let me ask something else. So Elamiata, if you're telling me that the model is the Pischa Shel Heichal, did that Tzuras HaPesach appear on the Heichal? Obviously. No, the whole concept of the Heichal, the entire thing was one gigantic Tzuras HaPesach. It was just open. Then the way the Mishkan was open, fine. But certainly the Heichal wasn't open. So then the Tzuras HaPesach is coupled to the din of the maximum width of 10. And you say, if there's a Tzuras HaPesach, then it doesn't matter. What do you mean if it's Tzuras HaPesach? It doesn't matter. The model. The model had a Tzuras HaPesach, and it did matter. How can you have it both ways? So then, lo tahani la Tzuras HaPetach, da heichal Tzuras HaPetach, hafilo. Didn't heichal have a Tzuras HaPetach? Obviously, that was the main point. And hafilo hachi, nonetheless, we were limited to 10 amas. And why does it say in our Mishnah that in the event that yesh lo tzurat ha-pesach, then it doesn't matter. It could be even more than Esra Amos. Ein tzurach l'mayit. For goodness gracious, that was the model with the tzurat ha-pesach, and you're limiting it from the model to 10. Yeah, okay. But this, you're only asking this question according to Rav, right? So Rav, in fact, is the one who is very oimed on his approach, namely that, yes, we do have a model. But I want you to know that when Rabbi Yehuda was teaching, he was a tutor for Rav's son. So he was teaching this Mishnah to Rav's son, and he said it over the way our Mishnah said it, right? And he said that in the event that it has a Tzuras HaPesach, ein tzurach l'mayit. So then Rav shouts out from his study, hey, you're teaching my kid wrong. You should be telling him, Atnaya, you do have to be Mamayat the Tzuras, even if it has a Tzuras HaPesach, which is fantastically consistent, because that's exactly what Rav would hold. If the model is the Heichal, and the Heichal incorporated a Tzuras HaPesach, and nonetheless was limited to a maximum of Eser Amos, so therefore Rav was perfectly consistent in shouting out to the tutor, what are you telling my kid, ain't a Tzurach Lamayat? Of course you'd have to be Mamayat, because it would be based on the Tzura of the Heichal.